Hello, this is Jada Bussey-Jones, the past president of the Society of General Internal Medicine and the host of SGIM's President's Podcast. We engage SGIM's former presidents who are leaders across healthcare, public health, policy, and academia. As we lead up to the organization's 50th anniversary, we hope to capture insights from our national thought leaders so that our organization, our members, and healthcare and society broadly are in a stronger position to grow, innovate, and meet the health challenges of our time. So to our listeners, we say thank you so much for joining us. Today, I'm delighted to talk with Dr. Seth Landefeld. Previously, he served as the chair of the Department of Medicine for the University of Alabama, Birmingham, and physician-in-chief of UAB Medicine, where during his tenure, he grew NIH-funded research over 70% to rank among the top 20 of U.S. departments. He is a fellow at the Center for Advanced Study in Behavioral Sciences, and in addition to being the past president of SGIM, where the organization awarded them their highest recognition for achievement, the Glaser Award, he has also led many other organizations, including as the director of the American Board of Internal Medicine and the president-elect of the Association of Professors of Medicine. Dr. Landefeld has received numerous recognitions. He has won multiple Teaching Excellence Awards at UAB, and he is an elected member of the American Society for Clinical Investigation and the Association of American Physicians, and is also a master of the American College of Physicians. Dr. Landefeld also serves on many boards of directors, including the board of directors for UAB Health System and the University of Alabama Health Services Foundation, and the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine. His discoveries have improved outcomes for seriously ill older people. Specifically, he is the creator of the ACE unit model that's been shown to reduce functional decline, shorten hospital stays, and improve satisfaction among older adults. As always, I'm so thrilled to talk with someone from your background and your leadership, especially the connection with our mutual organization. And I really appreciate you coming today, Seth. So I am looking forward to this conversation. And I was wondering if you might start by just telling me a little bit about yourself. And I noticed when I was reading your background story that you had received degrees in history from Harvard and philosophy and theology from Oxford when you were serving as a Rhodes Scholar. So I was curious about how you went from those degrees and that education to establishing a career in medicine. So I'd love to hear a little bit about you broadly, but then also how you came to medicine.
Well, Jada, thanks very much. It's really a delight to be here and to join our SGIM members. One of the themes that will come through is that SGIM has been an extraordinary home for me, and the community that we have that welcomes us, challenges us, and nurtures us is just tremendous. So it's wonderful to join the members. How did I come to medicine? We all figure that we had some choice in these things, and you look back and you say, gee, how much choice did I really have? My mother made me do it. Not really, but it's like you were on a shoot. For me, I think it was really incredibly influenced by the fact that when I was 4 years old, I got sick and I developed Wilms tumor. It was metastatic. This was a time when that killed everybody. And I was growing up in Cleveland, and my primary pediatrician mentioned to my parents a guy named Sidney Farber in Boston, and that I ended up meeting him and benefiting from actinomycin D. And my memories of that time when I was 4 and 5 are that you wonder what your memory suppresses. But I remember this as, wow, this is really exciting. These are really neat people. And so I love that. And as I ended up growing up, going to school, I always loved people and I love science. And so that in the back of my mind was that medicine is a great way to combine those things. But going off to college, I didn't want to come to premature closure. I love reading history and the history of science and had a chance to do that. And then started medical school before going to Oxford and got far enough in medical school that I realized I believe that theology, religion, philosophy are foundational for our lives. And once I was in medicine, I wasn't going to have a lot of time to develop this learning at all. So I took advantage of that as well. And it's also, I think, why I'm a general internist, that it gives us a chance in a very rigorous way to weave together many of the important things in life, the intellectual approaches to problem solving and the relational interpersonal foundation of people and, to me, happiness. So that's what brought me to medicine.
That is so awesome. I mean, I think sort of having these formative experiences at such an early age within the healthcare center system is really remarkable. And you've really described also how you've come to general medicine. I'm also wondering about leadership. So clearly you've had a lot of leadership responsibilities. Getting into medicine is one thing. How did you get into leadership? Is it something that you sort of thought about intentionally, or did it? I've been talking to a lot of people who it sort of seems like they fell into it or got an opportunity. So I was just curious about your path to leadership.
I think it relates a lot to liking people. And it also relates a lot to liking some degree of control. And it has been incredibly important to me whom I'm working for. Can I learn from them? Do I respect them? Am I happy working with those folks? And some of the things in leadership have come along because, well, the folks I could work for weren't always inspiring to me, and I wanted to take up the ball myself and run with it. Probably my first exposure to real leadership was when I was a kid on Outward Bound, and this was camping in the wintertime, and it was around based on sort of a logging kind of thing, and I ended up the other folks elected me their straw boss to lead this group of 15 folks or so. I mean, in many ways, and then going into medicine, who were the best doctors you ever knew? They were your chief residents, and they were way better than the faculty, and they knew a lot, and they taught a lot, and they were really, I wanted to emulate them. So I loved the opportunity to be a chief resident and to keep learning and keep working with other folks. As I got into general internal medicine, I think if you like teaching and you like mentoring and you like building things, then, I mean, you can't help but being a leader of people. And for me, the most incredibly rewarding thing was working with folks who were, they were always a little bit younger than me. They were always a good bit smarter than me. And I learned a lot working with them and helping them develop. So I think that was really the path to leadership. I think about, as I was thinking about our conversation today, I was wondering, what are the best, almost 40 years in medicine, what have been the best parts of that? And one part, I loved the being an early assistant professor. It was a very different era then. It was a kinder, gentler world. And I was aiming towards developing research. And I had incredible freedom to just learn all sorts of things from people that I'd never run into before, and then to implement them in trying to improve clinical care. I love that. And then the other job that I really love the most, I've really liked everything I've done, but I love being chair of a department. And again, it took me back to a place, there were so many people who knew so much interesting stuff that I didn't know and that I could learn from them. And when I was a chair, I said the big power that I had was that nobody would do what I told them to do, but they would come to a meeting and they would talk with me and they would teach me. So, I mean, that was just, I love doing that. And I think hopefully making things better for our faculty and patients and learners, and also having a lot of fun doing it. So that was sort of my path to leadership.
It sounds like your leadership journey also started during your formative youth, right? That, oh, those outbound experiences, but also that you were able to really learn and have an impact. And I can say too, that that's one of the things that I enjoy as a leader. I'm curious, as a former chair, when you think about the trajectory of academic general internal medicine, or even academic medicine broadly as a career path, what have been some of the most important changes that you saw over the tenure of your leadership? Are there challenges that still remain? What should we be thinking about when in our academic spaces?
Yeah, I think there are absolutely huge challenges. And I guess a lot of them don't make me very happy. But they also, part of the good part of it, is, it means there's a lot of work to do. A lot of work for, important work for people in SJIM to do. One challenge that has troubled me as a general internist is, I don't, there's no fighting the world on this. There's a lot less general in general internal medicine than there used to be. And when I was in training, we really ran the inpatient side, ran the outpatient side, ran the emergency room, your goal was to be a great physician who could handle almost any situation, either acute or chronic. Now, we weren't trained to handle many chronic diseases nearly as well as we do now. We didn't recognize what we didn't know. And I think those are really things that we've gotten much better at. But there's a lot less general in general internal medicine. And the fact that very few inpatient physicians see people outside of the hospital, that very few people who are taking care of patients while they're still walking at home or in the clinic see them in the hospital, that loss of relationship, loss of continuity, I think it's a loss. It allows us to do other things. In medicine, I think the part that worries me the most is what I would call the increasing corporatization of medicine and the increasing focus on the bottom line from a corporate point of view. And on the one hand, it has something to do with making the extraordinary advances in medicine available to us. I mean, you think about the diseases that we can manage well, sometimes even cure now, that we couldn't even dream of curing 30 years ago. And it's absolutely wonderful. But we're doing it in a world where I think our academic health systems have become increasingly focused on being high-functioning corporations and often not so much about either their patients or the people who work in them. And we need to keep that culture of caring for each other, of really caring for our patients, very much alive. That's one challenge. I think it's a challenge that as physicians, we in general, internal medicine, it's a place where we can make a real difference because we live in that space. We can become those leaders, and that you don't have the power to make it all happen, but you have incredible power to be engaged and actively changing things. The last year, I think, talk about things that are surprising. Who would believe that we'd be dealing with a secretary of DHHS who wants to turn the whole world of vaccinations and what's good for nutrition, what's good for your body, in many ways, upside down and inside out? And not to mention a federal hierarchy that treats a whole bunch of people in very inhumane ways. And that those are challenges that we can address as citizens, but you know, they're not directly in our line of sight control-wise as physicians. I think they are very much in our line of sight as our responsibilities to people in our population. So I think, and the question I ask myself that I don't have a good answer to is, what can I do to change that? And it's got to be more than simply hold your nose for another year or another 3 years or something. We have to take much more active approaches. But like the corporatization, the focus on profit in medicine and the higher level federal changes have been very troubling to me. The good news is that we have incredible diagnostic and therapeutic modalities. And the reason I've stayed in medicine and loved it for so long is the people we get to work with are wonderful people. And, you know, the students coming in are as every bit as dedicated as we were, and they're every bit as smart, in many cases smarter, and they know all sorts of things about how to use technology and to work with people that I had no idea of at their age. So it's really, I think those are the real positives that we have with us.
Yeah, you've brought up so many really wonderful points. I think I'm of the time frame where it's still always GIM has been whole person care, but in both ambulatory and inpatient settings. And in many cases, academic medicine has been immune, you know, where we can still do practice in both settings. But even that, I think, has become at risk. And to your point, more academic medical centers are becoming more corporate and monetized, not to mention some of the goal wins as well. So I appreciate the challenges, but also the really wonderful people that we get to work with every day, not to mention our patients, but our learners and colleagues. It sort of keeps us at this. So you've talked a lot about leadership and your role as chair and some of the challenges in internal medicine and medicine broadly. I'd like to narrow the conversation to SJIM a bit. And as you think about your engagement with the organization, Society of General Internal Medicine, I want to understand, how did you even hear about it? How did you join? How did you get started in the organization?
The first SJIM meeting I went to was the first one that was held in San Francisco, where I was a resident at the time, and probably the third year of the organization. And I think my first attending was Steve Schroeder, whom you've probably spoken with, and was an early president of SJIM. And I knew that this guy did really interesting stuff. And so he had told me about it. And at the time, I was applying for a fellowship and had spoken with Lee Goldman, who was at the Brigham at the time. And he said, well, let's talk at the SJIM meeting in San Francisco. It's going to be in your backyard. So that's what brought me to it. And it was really teeny. And at that time, it was REPSIM, you know, Society for Research and Education in Primary Care and Internal Medicine. And the things that appealed to me were this broad, holistic view of medicine and of people. And the people who were coming together were, now some people might say, oh, we were all elitist, you know, but they were really curious, academically driven people who also believed in caring for people and really doing the best that you could for your patients as a physician. So it was that combination. So it was people who shared values and shared an approach to very thoughtful approach to life that was very appealing to me. That's what really brought me to it. And then when I was a fellow in Boston, five or six of us as fellows would go to the REPSIM meetings together. And it was a bigger tent in Washington, but it had an intimacy where you felt you could really connect with your colleagues. And that part of what I loved working with people who were writing the articles that you read in Annals or New England Journal or JAMA. This was before the days of JGIM, and who were really addressing the questions that came up on rounds or came up in the clinic. So being part of that both caring environment as well as, well, let's get some answers to questions that'll really help us do better as physicians. It was very, very appealing to me.
First, can I just tell you how impressed I am that you can remember the words for the acronym? That's very impressive. But second, I'm wondering, because you've clearly been a part and even leading other organizations, how do you feel like this organization is different from your other professional societies and organizations?
Most other organizations are very, I will say, subspecialty focused. And I was, as a general internist, if you're in academic general medicine for 30 years, you're going to end up getting more specialized in one thing than another. I mean, that's just the way life happens. You know, so we do have, you like developing that expertise, but the most other organizations have a parochialism to them that SJIM does not. Now, maybe that parochialism is part of their secret sauce, you know, that they're able to generate more resources or more power or something, but I love that generalist, comprehensive, let's take it all on and try to really understand the complexity of the world and do something about it that is inherent in SJIM. And I think I'm also a geriatrician, as many general internists are. And I love geriatrics. I love taking care of old folks. I love working with geriatricians. But AGS, even though it's got a generalist view in some ways, it feels more parochial than SJIM. You know, SJIM is the only place you can go where you're going to be speaking to people in rural practice, people in inner city clinics, people in the hospital, people who are still doing acute intensive care, people who are teaching, people who are developing the new approaches to teaching, people who are making incredible discoveries. There's something about that that has a je ne sais quoi that's very, very appealing to me anyway.
I love that. And I'm wondering, as we think about our organization's history and plan for celebrating our 50th anniversary, do you have any thoughts or reflections that you want to share? Any advice for our current or future leaders of the organization, if you could offer any?
The downside of this broad view in these broad interests, what I call the curse of the generalist. I've got it up the wazoo. There are too many things that are really interesting. And that can be very diversionary. On the one hand, you don't want to deny the complexity of the context in which we live. And yet, to achieve things of importance, you have to have a focus and achieve focus on one or two or maybe three things and really advancing that. And asking ourselves in SGIM, what are those top three priorities? And what can we do about them as really an academically focused organization of general internists? And for example, many political and policy issues are critically important. And by and large, you know, we're not the organization that's going to have a lot of throw weight there. Individual members will have incredible throw weight because they're the intellects that are often driving things. But that's an area where I think we need to work with partners and really collaborate. But when it comes to what are the new ideas that are going to really shape the future of medicine and how it's practiced, I think we as an organization can lead that, both in education and thinking about what is the role for education has not done as good a job of generating evidence as many other parts of medicine. It's doing a much better job now than it did 30 years ago. How can we play a really creative role in that? And also practice. For so many people, the practice of office-based medicine has lost its joy. And how can we redesign how that works to give people the chance to really connect with their patients, to connect with each other, and restructure the system? I think there are people in GIM, general SGIM, who have all sorts of really creative ideas about how to do that. None of us knows what AI is going to bring. It's going to bring abilities, I think, for us to really extend what we can do. And we need to be leading that and really becoming expert ourselves so that we can think about how better to use that to care for people, including folks who are not getting enough care now. So I think having SGIM focus on what are those top priorities that where we can make a special difference and really trying to do that, I think is very important.
I think you're absolutely right. We have so many wonderful leaders and innovative thinkers. And so where we can be at the forefront of these innovative ideas that bring what you said, I love, joy in medicine and, you know, trying to figure out those issues, both for our current practicing folks, but also our future, the next generation, so to speak. So thanks so much for sharing those thoughts. I think it's really important. Maybe I'm going to turn a bit to some lighter questions. I'd love to hear a little bit about what you are reading or listening to right now.
Sure. Been carrying around William Carlos Williams' Doctor Stories, which I never read when I was younger. I can't believe it. They're so relevant. And they're very relevant to some of what we're speaking about now. And they're so much about people. I just have loved making my way through those over the last couple months. In terms of what I'm listening to, when I was in Birmingham, my wife was in Nashville. I spent a lot of time in Nashville. The food's better in Birmingham, but the music is unbelievable in Nashville. And I didn't know Steve Earle before going there. And I love his song, listening to him, Pilgrim is my favorite one. And John Prine was still alive when we got there and died during COVID. But I could listen to John Prine and Iris DeMent all day. But my favorites are How Lucky Can One Man Get, that's my mantra. I feel so blessed to be able to have done what I've done. And a really important song for me now is he sings another guy's song that he heard in Amarillo called Clay Pigeons, where it's all about, I never knew how to say y'all before being in Birmingham, but you know, it's all about y'all and it's all about how to get back in the game. And that incredible spirit and the joy that people who sing like that bring to their life and their work is very, very inspiring to me.
That is so awesome. I love that you have that as things that you're listening to. In addition to what you're reading and listening to, I know we talked earlier about grandkids, but I'm curious about other hobbies or things that you do for self-care. I mean, like after years of being so productive and busy, how do you take care of yourself?
I'm working on that. I haven't gotten the paycheck for a year now. So I've been retired for a year. And I said, gee, it was a whole lot easier working. one of the myths, and this is a danger of medicine, is we believe and we are told that everything we're doing is always so important, and it's not. So we get tied up in all sorts of things that are really not all that important. And so been able to reflect and discern and read people like David Foster Wallace to think about how do you apply, how can you be free to really decide what is important and how you want to make a difference in the world. So having the time to do those things and to do it in a disciplined manner is really, really good. To take care of myself, my wife and I pretty much swim every day, and that's, I hate jumping in and I feel so much better afterwards. You know, so it's like, it keeps me going. And we're back in California with all three of our kids, and all of our grandkids are now within an hour and a half for the first time in a long, long time. So being able to really have time with family, to reconnect with people, build relationships. I think building relationships, learning the world with my best friend and my wife is just really, really extraordinary. So we're saying geriatrics, you know, keep moving.
I love it as quickly as you can. I think those are great words of advice for all of us. And maybe in addition to thanking you, I'll give you maybe one last opportunity to offer any final words or reflection as we wrap up our time together today. Any last thoughts or reflection, either about medicine, personal, you know, sort of you talked about thinking about what you wanted to do or accomplish in the world, but any final reflections?
Sure. It's really about the incredible joy that we have in medicine and in life. And was listening to a friend and colleague yesterday, Bill Curry, who is a very wise general internist at UAB. And he spoke about the secret sauce of enchantment and allow yourself to find the enchantment in what you're doing in medicine or in anything else. And I think really thinking about that, where is the awe, where is the wonderment, where is the enchantment, and how can I keep that alive, and how can I share that with other people? I think that what will keep general internal medicine going is our excitement about what we do, the things that we are trying to make better, that we address, how we care for people, and sharing that with our young colleagues. There are so many really, really good people who want to make a difference in the world. And there's no better way to do that than as a general internist. So sharing that with folks, I think, is really, really important.
I love it. Awe, wonderment, and excitement. So, Seth, I really want to thank you again for joining us today. I also want to thank the SJIM staff and Roz Bogle, our executive producer, and our entire production team. Also, thank you to our listeners. You have been listening to SJIM President's Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please rate us and leave a comment wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps others to find us. Also, look for us on the SJIM website, sjim.org, and follow us on X.